since then. So while I was in Osaka, I was there for 2 years, and during that time, I applied to law school in the U.S. I actually took the LSAT, the law school entrance exam, in Tokyo, and I applied to law school during my second year. And I came back to the States to go to Harvard Law School in 2003. So then that's a three-year program. I graduated from Harvard in 2006, and then I went to a law firm called Latham & Watkins in their San Francisco office to practice corporate law. At that time, I was mainly doing project finance, which is just kind of setting up all the legal documentation for a financing of an infrastructure project, like a power plant or a bridge or something like that. So then 2008 hit, the economy got really bad in the States for finance. And personally, I was kind of getting bored with San Francisco, which is surprising because it's such a cool town. But I was sort of reminiscing about how much fun I had on JET, and I wanted to kind of recreate that experience. So I put in a request to be transferred from the San Francisco office to the Tokyo office. They granted my request, and I was transferred, and I moved out to Tokyo in 2008. And worked for the Tokyo office of Latham & Watkins for 2 years, doing finance and also doing a lot more mergers and acquisitions, you know, between Japanese companies and U.S. companies. So after that, after 2 years with Latham, I went to Waseda Graduate School of Commerce to do a research fellowship as a research fellow in the Momu Kagakusho ministry. That's the Japanese Ministry of Education scholarship. And that was really good. That was a one-year deal. Actually, the original plan was to do research for a year and then get an MBA from Waseda. But I eventually decided not to pursue that path. And instead, from Waseda, I went to work for Mitsubishi Aircraft Corporation in their legal department in Nagoya. They mainly hired me to kind of negotiate aircraft purchase agreements with their customers, and in particular to negotiate an agreement between Mitsubishi and SkyWest, which was their first big American customer. So I did that for 1 year. You know, I had the option to continue at Mitsubishi, but I decided that it was a better career choice to go back to the law firm and kind of pursue other options. So I actually went back to Latham in Tokyo. And just kind of continued what I was doing in finance and M&A. And just recently, due to kind of personal family issues, decided to come back to the U.S. I would have liked to have continued with my career in Japan, but, you know, there was just kind of a special family situation that required me to come back. So based on my experience with Mitsubishi, in aerospace, I was able to get a job in-house with a U.S. aerospace company, and that's where I am right now. So that's my story. So now I'll just talk about what I think are some kind of practical strategies for transitioning from JET to long-term employment in Japan. And I'll be talking mainly about private sector opportunities because that's what my experience is. Although I will at the end try and talk a little bit about the Momu Kagakusho program, you know, and opportunities for studying in Japan. So I think the two main paths that you can take in thinking about long-term employment in Japan is one is to do what I did, and that's to go, you know, back to the home country and obtain some kind of professional degree or some kind of skill or specialization that's marketable in Japan, and then come back to Japan and join, you know, a Japanese company or the Tokyo office of an international company in you know, as kind of a mid-level or a managerial type role. The other option is to just right out of the gate to try and get a job in Japan as more of kind of a entry-level position with, you know, a Japanese company or a U.S. company or other Western company that has an office in Japan. I'll first talk about the entry-level path. this is kind of the path where, as a JET, you would, apply for a job, go to a career fair, try and get a job through the website of a company, and you would enter the company as kind of a clean slate, an entry level person, and the company would train you, and you get all your training on the job. It's going to be much easier to do this with a Japanese company than with a non-Japanese company, because the non-Japanese companies typically, for the entry-level positions, only want to hire locally, whereas many of the Japanese companies that are kind of outward-looking and looking to, expand outside of Japan are much more receptive to hiring, non-Japanese people for entry-level positions on the basis that, once they train those people in 10 years, they'll be kind of, the managers within those companies who will help them expand outside of Japan. This path typically requires pretty good Japanese. If they're not hiring you for a particular specialty, if they're just hiring you as kind of a blank slate, you're probably going to need Japanese to function effectively in meetings and to, take direction and receive training from your supervisors. But there are some companies that are really trying to internationalize their culture, and one of the ways they're and companies like that. It's all large Japanese companies that are totally looking for opportunities to expand their services and products outside of Japan. And for that reason, they're very receptive to hiring young, ambitious, non-Japanese people. So some of the benefits, I think, of, just trying to go directly into a company as an entry-level position in Japan is that you really have the opportunity to kind of start at the bottom, just guide your career and experience various things, before you decide what direction you want to send your career in. And Japanese companies in particular, they have typically they transfer their employees between different departments with thinking that, that would give the employee a better understanding of the business as a whole. And I think that's good, if you're just starting your career, because then you get to experience various things and see what you like and try and position yourself to continue to get more experience in the area that you like. I think this route is also good for people who have, who want to live in Japan long term and, have a family in Japan and stuff. Because if you're working for a Japanese company, they're going to expect a long term commitment, and you're going to be paying into the Japanese pension system. So if you leave after 10 years, that's just a lot of money that you're going to leave on the table. Just being a Japanese company, you'll be completely immersed in Japanese culture, which is, good if your goal is to kind of, be in Japan long term and, raise your family in Japan. Some of the drawbacks, I think, of going entry level route, is that if you've only worked in Japan, some of your skills might not be as portable to other markets. So if you want to go back to your home country, or if you want to go work in some other country, you may kind of be viewed as just the Japan person. And in particular, if you're in a certain area like, banking or finance or law, there are certain other markets that the experience is viewed as much better. For example, like London or New York. If you start in a place like London and New York, it's going to be much easier for you to get a job in Tokyo or somewhere else, as opposed to starting in Tokyo and then trying to go to London or New York or another financial center. Another drawback is that some people find Japanese companies, a little bit stifling. Like, people have more of a Western perspective and approach to business. This was kind of an issue that I had at Mitsubishi, especially in terms of doing negotiations and trying to close transactions quickly. I often found that our contractual counterparts and our competitors or non-Japanese competitors were much more flexible and versatile and could quickly make decisions, whereas it typically making decisions within a Japanese company is a much more kind of bureaucratic, time-consuming process. So some people find it a little bit stifling. And then the other drawback is that typically the compensation will be a little bit less in a Japanese company than in a Western company. I think like your average salary, entry-level salary man, probably makes similar, just a little bit more than what you make as a jet. But for a Western company, like if you go work for Google or something like that, you'll make a lot more. Okay, so now I'll talk about the other route, which I mentioned, which is my route, and that's to go get a professional degree or a skill of some kind and then come back and market yourself in Japan based on that skill. So basically it's just kind of figure out what you want to do. If you want to get an MBA, if you want to get a law degree, if you want to do accounting or finance or marketing, and while you're in Japan as a jet, do what I did, do the legwork, take the entrance exam, whatever it is, apply, go back, get the degree. While you're getting the degree, kind of focus your studies on the Japan related aspects of that industry. And at the same time, just continue to study Japanese. And then once you graduate, you can either do what I did, like work for a few years in your home country and then come to Japan, or you can just try and right after graduating, come to Japan and enter a company or a firm, as a professional. I think with this route, you'll have a lot more opportunities to work for non-Japanese companies that have offices in Japan. Whether or not you need Japanese will depend entirely on the industry and the position. So for my job at the law firm, I didn't need Japanese at all. Of course, it was useful to have, but all of the meetings and all of the clients that we worked with spoke English. All the emails were in English, and I didn't really need Japanese. But if you're going to be like a consultant and just deal with domestic Japanese companies, your Japanese can be pretty good. So it totally depends on the industry. Some of the benefits of this route is that the compensation obviously is going to be better. You might even get a really good expat package, which is awesome because they, will pay your housing costs and give you cost of living adjustment and home leave and things like that. If your Japanese is really good and you have the professional degree, I think that's kind of the most powerful position to be in. And the people who have that are the ones who kind of become, country managers of, or even like Asia managers of companies that have their Asian base in Tokyo, or, like the partners in the law firms and stuff like that. An example of that would be there's a guy, his name's Larry Bates. He retired recently, but he was the Asia Council, Asia Regional Council for GE Corporation, based in Japan. And he was also their, their head of, I think it was government relations and diplomacy or something like that. But he was also the director of the American Chamber of Commerce in Japan. Just very, very well known in Tokyo, very connected and just had a very, really, amazing career. And I think it was based on the fact that he spoke really good Japanese and he was a great lawyer. So some of the drawbacks of this route are, one, obviously, if you want to stay in Japan, you have to go home and get some experience. Two, it's, expensive to go to school and there's no guarantee that you'll have a job when you graduate. And three, often, those types of jobs, like in banking and finance or whatever, are really stressful and they have really long hours. So you have to be the kind of person who that's personality and, you're okay with that. So in terms of strategies for taking either of these paths, if your goal is to do the entry level, type job and just, stay in Japan and transition directly into a, most likely a Japanese company. I think the strategy is one, while you're on jet, blast your Japanese as much as possible, because that'll make you much more marketable, and they'll just open up a lot of opportunities for jobs that just aren't considering non-bilingual candidates. To take advantage of all the career forum, like, for example, the Boston Career Forum is the one that I always hear about as having the most employers from Japan, and it's held once a year in Boston, and I've met quite a few people who have gotten jobs through that career forum. I think they also have a Tokyo Career Forum, which is administered by the same organization, and I think those are really good opportunities. Another strategy is to contact recruiters, professional recruiters in Tokyo, and see if you can find a recruiter who's willing to work with you on placing you within a Japanese company. And just as a side note, becoming a recruiter itself is a good, you know, job option. I know a lot of people who wanted to stay in Japan but weren't sure what they wanted to do, and they went into recruiting. And some of them went into recruiting thinking they would place themselves, and they did. And some of them have stayed in recruiting and been quite successful. I know one person that I met when I was at Waseda, and she graduated at the same time that I left Waseda, and she went to work for a recruiting company called Hayes, and then she was recruited from Hayes to work in the human resources department of Adobe Systems in Tokyo, and that's where she's at right now. Let's see, another strategy is to go to the websites of large Japanese companies that are expanding abroad and apply through their human resources career portals. All of the Japanese companies that are, you know, trying to be more international have these types of career portals on their websites, and they do read the resumes. I actually applied to one of those jobs once. I didn't get it. They told me I was overqualified, but they responded, which shows that, you know, they actually read my resume and it didn't just disappear into a black hole. So definitely, you know, just go to websites, get your resume out. For the professional side, I think the strategy is to get a professional degree from a good school and really utilize your free time while you're on JET to work on ways to, do stuff that looks good on your resume, to study for the entrance exam so you get a really high score, and to, you know, take the time to just put together a really good application package, which was what I did when I was on JET. Without the free time on JET, I don't think I would have been able to get such a good score in the LSAT, but I was able to, like, study, you know, 5 months in advance of the test, and that was really, really helpful. Another strategy is when you're studying, make sure to kind of guide your studies towards the Japan-related part of your field and to stay in touch with people in Japan. And that just helps you kind of keep up your connection with Japan so that when you graduate, you have a really good moral case why, employer should hire you in Japan. And, you know, the hiring process for a professional completely different depending on the industry, like for law schools and for people get an MBA who are going into investment banking or something like that. It's a very kind of standard set process, and you have like on campus recruiting, and it's all kind of done for you. You just show up and give out your resumes and go through the process, go through the ringer and get some offers. For other types of degrees, it's probably much more, you know, you have to do it yourself, like marketing or something like that. So it just totally depends. And the last strategy I'd suggest on the professional route is consider working in a Western market, like London or New York for a couple years, and then get some experience built up and then go to Japan. Just because, you know, having experience in like one of the big financial centers is just viewed very favorably. Right, so quickly I'll just talk about the Momokagakusho scholarship route. I think that's a great option if you're not sure what you want to do, and you just need some time to figure the Momokagakusho. If you receive the scholarship, they pay all of your tuition, can they give you a monthly stipend of around $1,300? It's tough to get by on, especially if you're in a place like Tokyo, but you can supplement your income with, you know, teaching or a part-time job or something like that. And it's a really cool program because once you're in, you can just continue. It'll continue to pay as long as you're enrolled in some kind of program with your school. So you could, you know, for example, start as a research student and then change, you know, to the MBA program. And so they would pay, like, you know, 1 year of research and 3 years of MBA. I have a friend who goes to Todai, and he's getting his doctorate, and he's on the Momokagakusho program, and he's been there, like, I think at this point, like 5 years, you know, and it's paid all of his tuition that entire time. So, I mean, to get a scholarship that will cover 100% of your tuition and you do a stipend, this is really, really good. The toughest part of Momokagakusho, I think, is going through all the, like, paperwork and bureaucratic process of the application, and you have to go interview at a local, you know, embassy in your home country. So it takes time. So you're going to need to, like, start in advance doing it. But if you, you know, follow the process closely and, you know, you're able to present a pretty good application, which you do concurrently with applying to the school you want to get into, I don't know any statistics, but I get a feeling like it's not totally difficult to get in. So I think that's a really good option, and I really enjoyed my time on at Waseda because I was studying both business and Japanese, and there was just a lot of flexibility to structure my schedule, and I, you know, had time to meet a lot of people, like, in the school and different programs, and it was just very, very rewarding. Okay, so that, I think, kind of concludes the main part of my discussion. There were a couple of questions that that Sarah sent to me that I wanted to pull out some that I thought were really good and just kind of answer them, and then maybe we can just, I guess, open up the floor for any other questions. So one question was, what do you wish you were told on day one of your jet life to help plan for your future? And I thought that was a really good question. Just in general, I think it's a good strategy to, like, always be thinking, you know, three to 5 years in advance. So what you're doing now is kind of positioning yourself for the opportunity that you want to go after down the road. So I think it's a good question to ask yourself when you're just starting JET and you have, you know, up to 3 years, you know, to kind of figure out what you want to do, to ask yourself, what should I be doing? So my advice for that would be, one, make Japanese friends who will speak with you in Japanese. That's one thing I kind of regret not doing. I made a lot of Japanese friends who spoke really good English, and then I hung out with, you know, a bunch of other JETs the whole time that I was on JET. So my Japanese did not improve nearly as much as it could have. I actually, after JET, did some summer intensive Japanese programs at Middlebury College in the U.S., and I actually spoke more Japanese, ironically, when I was studying Japanese in the U.S. than I did when I was a JET. So that's one of my pieces of advice, is hang out with Japanese people who will speak Japanese with you. My other piece of advice is just to really make the most of your time on JET and just enjoy the experience, because I don't think, you know, most of us probably will never have an experience as cool as JET probably again. Like, I look back on the first 6 months when I was in Osaka and how much fun I had. And I don't know, probably one of the best times of my life. And it was one of my motivations for, you know, transferring to Tokyo. So really just kind of relish the experience while you're on it, because it's a really unique once-in-a-lifetime thing. So another question was, what should we do to maximize our professional development experiences while on the JET program? So on that one, I think what you can do is, you know, another good thing about the JET program is that the hours are pretty regular. You know, you can leave at like 5 or 5:30 and you get your weekends to yourselves, you know, and get all your holidays. Is use that spare time to develop some kind of skill. So obviously, the one where you have the advantage to developing while you're in Japan is your Japanese. But you could do any number of other things. You could take online courses and get like your CPA, or you could start a blog, or you could I don't know, start an internet company, get some kind of certification. I recently came across a really cool company called Scoshbox, which is a company that just puts together like little Japanese snacks that you buy in the convenience store in a box. And like for a monthly subscription, they'll send people who are outside of Japan but interested in Japan, this box of goodies every month. And it's like a really slick website and a really cool idea. And I'm sure that they're making money. But you could even like start something like that while you're on JET with the free time you have and the fact that you live in Japan and can work with Japanese people if you can find like a partner who's interested in something entrepreneurial. So I think I'll stop there, because I feel like I've been talking for a while. And to see, I guess, if anyone has any questions. And I'm sorry if you submitted a question and I didn't answer it, so please feel free, just go ahead and ask it now and I'll answer it.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you. Hello. So my name is Wagner Soto. I'm a second year JET in Yamanashi. I'm actually going through what you went through. I'm applying to law schools now. So one thing that I've been having an issue with is finding a way to express like the skills that I've gained here in Japan. Like how would you or how did you take those skills that you gained in Japan and like use that to strengthen your application to law school?
So I think probably the main way that I used my Japan skills to enhance my application was, one, just kind of putting on my resume that I did JET. That shows that you have international experience, which I think is highly valued by law schools. Two, there were some things that I did while I was on JET that I think looked really good on my resume. Like I set up kind of a email exchange program between my school in Osaka and the high school that I went to in Texas, and I think that was good. And I also put, I was also like participating, in some of the JET conferences they hold, and giving like speeches about like classroom discipline and stuff like that. So I was just on the resume itself, like describing all of the experiences that I had on JET. I think that's one way that being on JET improved my application. Another way was that in the personal statements, when I applied, I think most law schools required like 3 to 5 personal statements about various issues. And I would say in most of those personal statements, in some way, I would work in the fact that I had international experience from, doing the JET program, and that kind of in some way, broadened my perspective and, made me a more global citizen and made me a more, because of that experience, I have more to contribute to the law school student body and to the conversation. As a specific example, I think in one of my personal statements, I wrote that, having lived in Asia for 2 years, I've, traveled in a lot of developing, countries, which, during my free time on JET, I would like go to the Philippines and Thailand and stuff like that. I wrote that, I was able to see kind of what the living conditions are like. And because of that, it kind of inspired me to maybe, when I become a lawyer, use my skills to help improve those living, to help kind of make a positive change in those places, which are really beautiful but really poor. It turned out not to be that way. It was a bunch of lies. I went into corporate law. I feel guilty about it. But anyways, that was one of the things that I put on my personal statement. So yeah, I think that those are kind of probably the two ways that that JET helps my application.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yep. Yeah, it's Mungu Kagakusho. I think if you were to do an internet search, like for Japanese Ministry of Education scholarship, it would probably come up. Or if you did a search for Mungu Kagakusho, that would come up. If you have trouble finding it, just let me know and I'll email you the link.
Okay, thank you very much. It looks like that's all the questions that we... Oh, Julie is writing something. Maybe I should wait.
Okay.
She said she lost her... Okay, she said thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, so actually, after this call, we're actually getting to 10:33 now. So we're going to have to finish for the day. So thank you very much, Clifton, for coming and talking to us. It was very interesting. I especially was really interested in the Mungu Kagakusho scholarship, so thanks for talking about that.
You're welcome.
So I'll be sending a survey shortly to the participants of this call, so if you could, just fill that out for me, and we can get your important feedback, and hopefully hope to hold more of these in the future, in the near future, so please think about filling that out for us. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
Thanks.
Thank you.